Welcome to the Banker Exchange, our weekly sit-down about what is happening now, what the industry is chatting about, and what bankers like you need to know. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banker Exchange, a podcast from The Banker. I'm Liz Lumley, and joining me today is Sophie Winwood, an absolute star in the fintech and VC communities. Hello, Sophie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you. So as our audience knows, The Banker Exchange is our weekly sit-down about newsy bits that influence current and future stories on TheBanker.com. So, Sophie, I've known you for quite a few years, and I've seen your journey up the ranks within the fintech ecosystem. So we're going to talk, of course, about startups, about funding, about fintech, and we're also going to talk about women as well. I was very impressed with a blog post that you wrote a few weeks ago that was much more eloquent than I would have. You didn't use words like bad words I'm not supposed to use on an FT podcast. Anyway,
you should have seen the first roll.
Those are always good to write. But I wanted to start with an origin story because, you know, I didn't major in fintech in university either. And you focused on MBioc, molecular and cellular biochemistry at Oxford, which sounds excellent. So what lured you away from that into the world of fintech?
Yeah, firstly, it wasn't excellent. It was very difficult. I think I went into university. I love science, I love maths, and I think I wanted to, you know, find the next cure for cancer and save the world that way. And was really bad at pipetting and terrible in the lab. And both my parents own their own businesses, so I kind of wanted to see what this business thing is.
Oh, it's in your blood.
Yeah, let's say it's in my blood. And so did the classic, I don't know what I want to do, go and do audit at one of the big four, which I hated, and very quickly moved into mid-market M&A within banking and specialty finance. And there I was working on quite a lot of, you know, old traditional businesses like insurance brokers and, you know, debt acquirers. And then I worked on one fintech deal, which was a parking payments app, actually, and one insurtech deal, which was very, very early on. Mm. And I just thought, yeah, this is the future. This is what I want to be part of.
I found home.
Exactly. Oh, my God. There are women in these teams. And they move quite quickly and they don't wear suits. How exciting.
Oh, very good. Yeah. No, it's fun when you find home. You know, you mentioned that it was, you know, very early on. And it does seem that you entered into this space just at the start of what I call like the modern fintech revolution. So I know I tell people I've been in fintech for 30 years, but this kind of, you know, apps on your phone and easy API development just came about maybe like 15 years ago. How have you seen the space kind of changed during that time?
Yeah, I think I got into fintech about 8, 9, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I felt like I'd missed the like golden age of the spark of this is something new and exciting and we're going to build it together. But it was still pretty early and it did feel quite niche at the time. It felt like you just knew everyone in fintech at that time. You knew people that were building, you knew people that were interested in it.
It was just so fun to be cool all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. It was the time of people picking up women with Monzo cards or like picking up a date with a, you know, coral card.
Actually, it would have been called Mondo.
Exactly. Oh, God. Those are the days. I think the other thing was only people in fintech really used fintech apps. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a Monzo account, but none of my friends really did. Mm-hmm. No one really knew what Starling was. And it also was very, you know, it was digital offerings of kind of regular products and mostly B2B, which I think is where most of these industries tend to start. Whereas now, if you look at it, it is fintech is so broad. It can cover multiple different things from regtech to insurtech to e-commerce even. But when I started, it was very focused around financial hubs like London and New York. Now it's everywhere. Paris is doing some really cool stuff. Germany. And also we're seeing this kind of depth of innovation, not just B2C, but B2B and cross-sector. So yes, it's just ballooned, I have to say.
Yeah. I think the majority of the fintechs I come in contact with are selling to banks or B2B, even though B2C gets all the column inches.
Exactly.
going on. You know, it's interesting. I mean, not just fintech, but the wider tech world. The past few years have been what a lot of people are writing and calling the easy money era. I think anyone who's raised funding for a startup was wondering when that easy money era was. It is always difficult to raise funding. But we're now in a very different environment. There's high interest rates. There's been a lot of layoffs in the tech industry. There's been a lot of fintechs that have failed recently. You know, what are your views on this environment? Do you think it's a necessary correction or a downturn? What are your opinions?
Yeah, I'm very much I'm an eternal optimist, so I always see the glass half full. But I really believe this was a necessary correction. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2021, 2022. We saw, because capital was freely available, companies that might not necessarily have been funded before being funded, valuations that were not tied to anything in the real world. Yeah. And, you know, I think because money was free, why not start a startup? Even if you don't really care, like, you know, it's cool to be a startup founder and why not? And I think that now we're in this environment where it is difficult to get funding. And because of the macro and also the tech landscape, the path to funding is a lot harder, the path to acquiring, product market fit, go to market, etc. You only really get founders that really have a problem they want to solve. They are obsessed with this problem. They are sure it needs to be solved. They have the industry expertise. And I think if you look back to sort of 2008, 2011, and the financial crisis, some of the biggest fintechs were born out of that era. Mm. And I think we'll see the next generation of multi-billion dollar companies built out of this environment.
So it's kind of that crisis era.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the grit that makes the pearl.
Exactly. Yeah. We love grit.
I mean, it's true. It's like I have so much admiration for founders, but that sort of startup culture. I remember once I was in a Starbucks and someone commented on my startup bootcamp sticker on my laptop, and I immediately said, "Well, what's your company?" He was like, "Oh, I don't have a startup. I just love them." And it's like, "Okay, who are you? Go away."
Yep.
Anyway, so that's what I call a red flag. So that's my next question. I mean, you evaluate a lot of early stage startups. You know, what are some of the things that you look for, and what are red flags?
Yeah, and I think that word grit, it's a little bit overused, but I think it is really important because, you know, building a startup to a large company to either be acquired or go public is not a straight line. You're not just on the path to growth and profitability. It's really a bumpy, scary thing.
It's not a rocket ship ride.
It is absolutely not. Take that rocket ship emoji off all of the the content. But, you know, and it's taking longer because, as we know, private companies are staying private for longer. A lot of that valuation creation is in the private market. And so you need to have the grit to go through issues for a relatively long time to then realize the kind of full potential. So grit is a really important one for us. I think specifically within fintech, you really want someone that has an area of expertise, that has either lived or breathed the problem, been in the area for a while, has the contacts, because it is a difficult industry. There's regulatory issues, there's multi-stakeholder, and there's nuances in the business model and unit economics, so some form of sector expertise. And then at Fox Capital, something we really value is the ability to tell a story. So if you're a founder, you need to tell a story and sell something that isn't actually real yet to your investors, to your employers, and to your customers. Mm-hmm. And that ability to eloquently sell a story, I think, is really important and something that we look for.
Mm. So in your career, you've worked at Innovate Finance, you've worked at Anthemis Group, you're an operating partner at, you mentioned, Fox Capital, and you're also the co-founder and CEO of WVCE.
Yes.
Is that pronounced? Is that, did you just say the letters? WVCE, which is described as promoting inclusion, empowerment, and integration of VC internationally. So how does it achieve those goals?
Yeah, and I want to thank you because I have two big passions in life, fintech and diversity. And so I guess talk about both on this podcast.
Yay.
So we started, me and my co-founder, Ruth Fox-Blader, started this in 2022, where we basically were sick of the state of diversity in venture capital and corresponding funding to female founders. We all know the stats we love to hate. Only 2% of VC funding goes to all female teams. Only 16% of partners in Europe are women. And so we were like, we've got to do something about this. So we've created an effective network for supporting diverse investors. We do this through a very active WhatsApp group. We have over 750 women in our WhatsApp group. We do local events, online events. We produce content and resources, and we have a flagship summit in Paris in October, which brings together 350 women across Europe to really just talk about all of the important topics in venture at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard of that Paris event. I've heard people talk about it fondly as well. You know, and it's interesting. I mean, even though I've spent 30 years in the financial technology industry, my brief sojourn into the VC and investment world, I thought I had experienced sexism before. I was in the junior leagues when I was in that world. And I've talked about this before. I mean, the stuff that, and I'm sorry to say it, is men who say things to your face and they don't see anything wrong with some of these statements. And I'm getting to my last thing, which is, you wrote a post in our sister publication, Sifted, which is a response to an interview with Hussein Kanji of Hoxton Ventures, where he talked about hiring women and he described them as a tax.
big breath in.
Okay.
That's why I don't.
So, and it was such a perfectly reasoned response to what I consider was such a lazy and ignorant comment. So just for our audience listening, just talk us through that comment and your response to it.
Yeah, thank you. And I think firstly up front, I want to say this isn't an attack on Hussein. It was a clumsy wording in a well-timed article. The article was the day before International Women's Day. What I am talking about is that is not an outlier. And this is not an outlier view. This is a view that's held across the venture capital industry. The headlines are there are no female partners. It's too difficult to train women. And the only candidates for partners that are valuable is someone who has had years of experience in VC and sat on boards and run a company. And, you know, we just can't find any women.
I've been told there are no female founders.
Yeah.
They don't exist.
I
need to stop interrupting you. Keep talking.
No, and as the eternal optimist, I generally get super excited about the potential, but the unconscious bias is maddening. I almost wish sometimes people would be more outward about it, because then you could be like, okay, at least they know what they're talking about. But the unconscious bias is more difficult to tackle.
You think it's unconscious? I think it's conscious.
Yeah, I think there. I mean.
I know. Sorry. Bringing you over to the dark side.
Yeah. I mean, the LinkedIn sort of comments that I got post this article were depressing, and maybe for a drink in a pub, but one day. but essentially, I think what happened was when that article came out, because I run this community of women in VC, I saw the impact that this article had. And you might say, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. Everyone knows there are female partners in Europe. Yes, but it's not that. It's the fact that they are absolutely not recognized for their value and they're not seen as a part of this industry. And I had women calling me up in tears, said, what's the point? Like, why am I even doing this? Why am I progressing in this extremely hard industry when I'm never, ever going to be recognized for my value? And so I thought that can't be out there without a response. And my response is basically summarized into three buckets. One, there are female partners. There are 350 plus. If you look at Sifted, have a list, and it's continuously edited and added to every day. So that is complete BS. And do research, look hard. I think sometimes people are lazy, like with the female founder thing. Just try a bit harder.
Yeah.
You know, they're just being lazy. The second point is around this tax thing. It's a tax to train women. Firstly, it's not a tax to train anyone. Developing talent is an asset and it should be viewed that way. And actually, because women have a lot higher standards put on them in this industry, in every industry, I think we're you know, aware of that, then they tend to actually be better developed than their male counterparts because they've been working harder to reach these impossibly high standards. And then the third one, which I think we as a venture industry need to wake up on, is venture is all about diversification. That is the aim of the game. The way that you get returns in venture is you have a diversified portfolio. How do we not think that applies to teams? It's mad. So do you really believe that hiring a white man who's been in the industry is going to impact your returns better than a woman who has access to different talent pools, thinks differently, can, you know, win deals in a different way, interested in different verticals. You know, I think we just need to take a step back and rethink. And that's why I think that actually what the thing that's really cool is that we're seeing a lot more emerging managers who are women starting their own fund and just being like, yeah, you know what, this industry is broken, I'm just going to do it differently. And that's super exciting.
I like that response as well. And in a way, I mean, I'm in no way suggesting hiring people who aren't qualified for the job, but it seems to me sometimes, I mean, especially when you're an older woman in this industry, when you see the gatekeeping around qualifications, and I think a lot of women have recognized, you get told, okay, well, we'll hire you if you meet these requirements. And so women do. And then, oh, no, you need to have it's like the goalposts get moved. So it's not about having all your boxes ticked. It's a gatekeeping that continuously stays closed, no matter, you know, how many businesses you founded, how many years of experience you might have in the industry, or what value you could give to a company. The amount of money being left on the table just floors me. As an avowed capitalist, I don't understand it.
Anyway. I know. And I think that's the thing, is we all know the data. It's all there. If you really want to see the impact that you could have by investing in female founders, the Rose Review said it was $250 billion that could be added to the UK economy. But that the data doesn't seem to be working. And that's why I think we started WVC, which was like, okay, we got to get boots on the ground. We've got to support people in a different way, because something's got to change.
Something's got to change. Excellent. Well, we could go on forever and ever and ever. But I'm going to leave you with a final question. And we have a new question that we're going to ask all of our outside guests here on the Banker Exchange. So the Banker Exchange is supposed to be a marketplace for the exchange of ideas and current thoughts. And so for the benefit of future thinkers and doers in financial services, we would like you to offer an object or an idea to the Banker Exchange time capsule. This is going to be opened, who knows, at the discretion of the Banker editorial team. It might be later on this year. It might be 5 years from now. So what idea or object would you like to put into our time capsule for 2024?
Yeah, I think I've been thinking about this. I think this becomes more powerful the later it gets opened. But I wanted to take a screenshot of my banking app on my phone, because I have 8 different apps. And I believe that in the future, we'll see a lot more consolidation, and you'll be able to do a lot more in one app. And the fact that I have 8 different financial services app on my phone I think people will look back and laugh at it and think that's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I've got to look. I wonder how many I have. I know it's a folder. Excellent. Thank you so much. That is being put in the vault. Your 2024 8 banking apps. Excellent. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Banker Exchange, part of the portfolio of podcasts from the editorial team at The Banker, available on thebanker.com and wherever you get your podcast fix. Search on The Banker Podcasts to listen to more.